Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we today's Ekadasi, we read Prabhupada Lilamrita on Ekadasi, so we'll read something. Today, though, is also the disappearance day of Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So we will read just a little bit about him from the biography of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur towards the end. For the time being, though, initially, let us read from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 2, Planting the Seed, New York City, 1965 to 1966, Chapter 21, Beyond the Lower East Side. When Prabhupada came down to hold his morning class on November 19th, he carried a large red book instead of the usual brown one, but no one noticed the difference. He began, as always, softly singing prayers to his spiritual master and accompanying himself with a faint rhythm on his bongo. The neighbors were still asleep. The weather was cold, but the steam radiators kept the storefront warm. There would be no more outdoor chanting now. In Manhattan, the city opens wide in the summer and shuts tight in the winter, which for the evening classes meant no more noisy children outside the door. And although the morning classes had always been quiet even in the summer, now with winter approaching, the group became a tighter, more committed core of sincere students, coming together to hear Swamiji speak. It was now 4 months since he had begun ISKCON at 26 Second Avenue. He had held 3 separate initiations and initiated 19 devotees. Most of them had become serious, although a few remained casual visitors. Now, in these morning classes, Swamiji wanted to instruct them more about how to become devotees. Just let me check one thing. I forgot. Yes, I knew it. It crashed. But it's back. Sorry. You're not going to let me unmute myself. I'm not going to bother continuing to try. Anyway, sorry, I'm just going to carry on. I'm just going to carry on. All right. He led the chanting of Hare Krishna for 20 minutes, cautioning them to respond softly so that the neighbors would not pour water through the ceiling again, although they hadn't done it lately. Prabhupada always tried to cooperate with the tenants, but occasionally someone would start a petition, which never amounted to much, against the devotees. Sometimes Prabhupada would help the landlord, Mr. Chuti, by taking out other tenants' garbage or just giving him a hand. Mr. Chuti was a husky, bare-bellied Polish refugee who lived alone in an apartment on the first floor. Mr. Chuti respected the Swami for his age and scholarship, and Swamiji was always amiable with him. Whenever Mr. Chuti came to the apartment, he would never take his shoes off, and Prabhupada would always say, "That's all right, that's all right." And one time when the plumbing didn't work in Prabhupada's apartment, Prabhupada went downstairs and took a shower in Mr. Chuti's apartment. But Swamiji also considered Mr. Chuti a classic example of a foolish materialist, because although he had spent his life's savings to buy this building, he still had to work so hard. Swamiji said he was a fool for having spent his savings to buy such a rundown building. Because the building was in such poor condition, he had to work like an ass to keep it up. "This is how the materialists work," Swamiji would say. Mr. Chuti, although respectful to the Swami, didn't like the devotees. Prabhupada told his disciples, "Treat him as if he were your father." So that's what they did. Anytime they would have to deal with Mr. Chuti, they would approach him saying, "We are your sons." Those disciples who lived at the storefront had risen by 6:30, bathed, and assembled downstairs by 7, while those who lived outside were arriving separately, taking off their coats and piling them on the shelf of the display window. Although women always attended the evening meetings, Jadarani was usually the only girl who came in the morning. After breakfast, she would begin painting upstairs in the Swami's front room. She used a beginner's technique of dividing the canvas into vertical and horizontal grid lines and transposing bit by bit the corresponding sections of the photograph onto the canvas. The process was painstaking, and sometimes her painting was out of proportion. But Jadarani was sincere, and that pleased Prabhupada. She had completed several paintings of four-armed Vishnu, a new painting of Radha Krishna, and a painting of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. When the painting of Lord Chaitanya was finished, Swamiji had hung it in the temple. Now, he announced, "There should be no more nonsense here. Lord Chaitanya is present." After the morning kirtan, Swamiji said as usual, "Now chant one round." They chanted together, following him. They all had a vow to chant 16 rounds daily, but they chanted their first round in the morning in the Swami's presence so he could see each of them. As Swamiji chanted, he looked out at Second Avenue, which was mostly deserted, or at the pictures on the wall, or with concerned glances at the individual devotees. Sometimes he seemed surprised when he saw them chanting so earnestly, giving evidence of the power of the holy name to deliver even the most fallen. Some of the devotees kept their beads in a bee bag like his, but when they chanted the first round together in the morning, they imitated him by holding their beads out in both hands and chanting along with him, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, until they finished one round. Then he held up the unfamiliar red book. "Because you're a little advanced," he said, "I'm going to read today from the Chaitanya Charitamrita." "Chaitanya what?" No one was able to pick up the pronunciation. They had heard of Chaitanya, certainly, but not of this new book. But in his room the night before, Prabhupada had informed some of the devotees that he would start reading from a new book, Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said that Lord Chaitanya had told one of his disciples that understanding Krishna wasn't really possible, but that he would give the disciples just a drop of the ocean of Krishna consciousness so that the disciple could then appreciate what the whole ocean must be like. Be patient as I present this, he had told them. It is revolutionary, but you should just be patient. In the storefront, Brahmananda turned on the reel-to-reel tape recorder as Swamiji began reading the Bengali verses, and both Satswarupa and Umapati opened their notebooks and waited, poised for rapid note-taking. It was almost a college classroom atmosphere as Prabhupada cleared his throat, put on his eyeglasses, and peered over the large open volume, turning to the correct page. Whenever he wore the glasses, he seemed to reveal a new personality of deep Vaishnava scholarship. This feature of Swamiji emphasized his old age, not that it showed him feeble or invalid, but it emphasized his scholarship and wisdom and his contemplation of the scriptures, in contrast to his vigorous drum playing in Tompkins Square Park or his alert business dealings while looking for a new building. Swamiji began reading and translating the story of Sanatan. Satswarup wrote Sutta and Umapati wrote Sonatan, and his brother Rupa, and how they became intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. It was a historical account. Rupa and Sanatan had been born as Brahmins in India, but they had served in the government under the Muslims who were in power at that time. The two brothers had even adopted Muslim names. But when Lord Chaitanya was touring in their part of the country, they had met him and had become determined to give up their materialistic ways and follow his path of pure love of God. Rupa, who was so rich that he had enough gold to fill two boats, left his high government post, divided his wealth, became a mendicant, and joined Lord Chaitanya. For Sanatan, however, there were more obstacles. The Nawab Shah, the chief Muslim ruler of the province of Bengal, was dependent on Sanatan's managerial expertise. But Sanatan began staying home and submitting sick reports. Well, actually, he had employed a dozen Brahmins who were teaching him the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Nawab sent his physician to find out the actual state of Sanatan's health. And when the Nawab heard that Sanatan was not actually ill, he himself arrived one day, surprising Sanatan and the Brahmins. The Nawab demanded that Sanatan return to his government work and leave him free to do some hunting and to leave Bengal on a military campaign. But Sanatan said that he could not, that he was now determined to study the scriptures, and that the Nawab could do with him whatever he liked. At this challenge, the Nawab imprisoned Sanatan. Swamiji looked at his watch. Morning classes were shorter than those in the evening, only half an hour, and Rupanuga, Satswarup, and Brahmananda had to go to work. He paused in his narration. So we will discuss tomorrow. Prabhupada closed the book, and after a few informal words, he got up and left the storefront, followed by Kirtanananda, who carried his book and glasses. Breakfast was served every morning in the storefront. Either Achyutananda or Kirtanananda would cook an oatmeal cereal for the devotees. Satswarup had read in an English edition of the Ramayana about some sages preparing a mystical cereal called Heavenly Porridge. The name had caught on, and the devotees began calling their own cereal Heavenly Porridge. The popular fare would consist of steaming hot heavenly porridge, sweetened to taste with sugar syrup from the gulab jamun pot, hot milk and fruit, and each devotee would get an ISKCON bullet. At breakfast this morning, the talk was of Rupa and Sanatan. Umapati said, Umapati said the Chaitanya Charitamrita was available in an English translation, but maybe the Swamiji wouldn't want them to read it. We'll hear it from Swamiji, Kirtanananda said. Hayagriva was amused at the cliffhanger ending of the class. Tune in tomorrow, he laughed loosely, and hear what happened to, what's his name? The devotees responded differently. Santan, Sonaton, Sanatan. Hayagriva, yeah. Tune in tomorrow and hear, will Sanatan get out of jail? They were not the most sober group when together, especially after having the thick, sweet syrup. Achyutananda spilled some of the syrup on the rag, and Kirtanananda admonished him. Jadarani ate silently and hurried to begin a day's painting in Prabhupada's room. Satsarup adjusted his tie, and he and Rupanuga and Brahmananda went to their jobs. The next morning, the Chaitanya Charitamrita seminar began with Sanatan in jail, planning how to get free to join Lord Chaitanya. His brother Rupa sent him a note saying that he had left a large sum of money for Sanatan in the care of a grocer, and Sanatan offered the gold to the jailer as a bribe. He told him, "Sir, I know you're a very learned man, and in your Quran it says that if you aid someone in going to spiritual life, then you'll be elevated to the highest post. I'm going to Lord Chaitanya, and if you'll assist me in escaping, it will be spiritual gain for you. Also, I'll give you 500 gold coins, so it will be material gain as well." 500 gold coins in those days. Don't ask me how much that would be worth. You know, each coin is probably an ounce of gold, or which is, I don't know how many thousands of rands. I don't know how many. But really, really a lot. All right, all right. The jailkeeper said, "All right, but I'm afraid of the king." So Sanatan advised him, "Just say that when I was passing stool by the river, I fell in with my chains and was washed away." For 700 gold coins, the jailer agreed to help Sanatan and sawed off the shackles. Sanatan, accompanied by his servant, then fled by the back roads until by nighttime he came upon a hotel. Now, this hotel was kept by thieves, and an astrologer at the hotel read Sanatan's palm and judged by the stars that he had money. When Sanatan asked for assistance in passing over the jungle mountains, the hotel keeper said that he would help Sanatan leave in the dead of the night. They treated Sanatan with great respect, which made him suspicious, since he hadn't eaten in 3 days and his clothes were unclean. So he asked his servant if he had any money. The servant said yes, he had 7 gold coins. And Sanatan immediately took the money to the hotel keeper, who was already planning to kill him during the night and take his money. Swamiji looked at his watch. Again, they had gone over time. "So we will continue tomorrow," he said, closing the book, "how Sanatan manages to escape the dacoits." Oh, Krishna. So I'll read another little segment here, and then we'll say something and read something about Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Kirtanananda, Brahmananda, Achyutananda, Gagamuni, Satsvarup, Hayagriva, Umapati, Jadarani, Rupanuga, Damodar, Dan Clark. Their lives had all been transformed. Over the months, they had transferred the center of their lives to Swamiji, and everything revolved around the routine of classes and kirtan and prasadam, and in coming and going to and from the storefront. Brahmananda and Gagamuni had given up their apartment several months ago and moved into the storefront. The ceiling of Achyutananda's apartment had caved in one day, just minutes after he had left the room, and he had decided to move to the storefront also. Hayagriva and Umapati had cleaned up their Mott Street place and were using it only for chanting, sleeping, or reading Swamiji's Bhagavatam. Sri Sri Radharadna, Sri Giri Govardhan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Satsvarup had announced one day that the devotees could use his apartment just around the corner from the temple for taking showers. And the next day, Roy Ram had moved in, and the others began using the apartment as a temple annex. Jadarani kept making her early morning treks from the Bronx. Swamiji had said that he had no objection to her living in the second room of his apartment, but that people would talk. Even Rupanuga and Damodar, whose backgrounds and tastes were different, were also positively dependent on the daily morning class and the evening class 3 nights a week, and in knowing that Swamiji was always there in his apartment whenever they needed him. There were, however, some threats to this security. Prabhupada would sometimes say that unless he got permanent residency from the government, he would have to leave the country. But he had gone to a lawyer, and after the initial alarm, it seemed that Swamiji would stay indefinitely. There was also the threat that he might go to San Francisco. He said he was going, but then sometimes he said he wasn't. If the negotiations through Mr. Price for the building on 10th Street came through, then Swamiji said he would make his headquarters in New York City and not go to San Francisco. But at least in the morning sessions, as his disciples listened to him speak on Chaitanya Charitamrita, these threats were all put out of mind, and the timeless, intimate teachings took up their full attention. Krishna consciousness was a struggle. Keeping yourself strictly following Swamiji's code against Maya, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. But it was possible, as long as they could hear him singing and reading and speaking from Chaitanya Charitamrita. They counted on his presence for their Krishna consciousness. He was the center of their newly spiritualized lives, and he was all they knew of Krishna consciousness. As long as they would keep coming and seeing him, Krishna consciousness was a sure thing as long as he was there. Okay. I'm going to say a few words just for a little while, maybe 10 minutes or so, about Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was a very close associate of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. And he became the initiating spiritual master of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Yeah. He would visit Srila Bhaktivinod's place, Swananda Sukhada Kunj, just on Godrum Dweep in the Navadweep area, just by the Jalangi River. He would visit there regularly and have discussions, Krishna conscious discussions, with Srila Bhaktivinod, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would listen and really feel very, very inspired and just deeply moved by the association of Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. You know, there are many stories, and there's a biography, actually. It's a bit rough, but it's a biography. But let's just say a few things. First, I want to talk about the whole event surrounding the initiation of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. This took place in January 1990. 1990, yeah. Krishna. January 1900. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur told Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that you must take initiation from Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Yeah. You know, Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he was avaduta. He was really avaduta. Means he just did his own Krishna conscious thing. He didn't worry about anyone else at all. Oh, Krishna. Yeah. So whereas Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he was the son of, one of the sons of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very prominent person in the local society because he was the deputy magistrate in British India. The highest post, as I've been told, the highest post an Indian could have in the government of India at that time, as I was told, was deputy magistrate. Couldn't be like the chief magistrate, only the deputy. But it was a very high position. And Prabhupada talks about that. Prabhupada says it was very close to being the governor. Because, yeah, you would have many, you wouldn't just sit in the court and, you know, deal with court cases. You would deal, you know, being a local, speaking the local language, plus speaking English. He would have many responsibilities to do with the general organization of the, whatever the region was. In this case, the Navadweep region. So he's a prominent person. He was very aristocratic and, you know, not a poor person. Yeah. So, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was brought up in that type of environment. Whereas Gaurkishore, he would just wear rags and just eat whatever. Yeah, he was really like in a different world. There's one story I can just mention, that at one point a nice devotee family, husband and wife, they were very sincere devotees, and they had money, and they had a dharamshala, means like an informal hotel, very cheap hotel, in Navadweep town. And they invited Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj to come and stay in the dharamshala. They would give him a room, and, you know, he'd have his own place, and everything would be, relatively speaking, quite nice. Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, "All right, if you want, I will come and stay. But I will not stay in your room. I will stay in the toilet, like the public bathroom with urinals and, you know, just like for a number of people, for the residents of the dharamshala. I will live there." And they said, no, you can't live there. That's just, you know, it's not clean. It's just, sure, it's terrible. There's a room. We have a room. It's all right. And Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, "Well, if you will not let me stay in the toilet, the public toilet, I will not stay." So he stayed there for a while. Yeah, he was avaduta. Yeah. Sometimes he'd do socially unacceptable things. But anyway, so now Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has instructed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you must take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he was, brought up in this high-class environment, very cultured and fairly affluent and very well-known in society. Yeah. And he himself at school, because now, he appeared in, 1876? Something like that. He had finished school, and he was like a genius at school. It was just, he did so well, incredibly well. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was illiterate. He could not read or write even his own name. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta thought, okay. And Gaurakishore had not accepted any disciples. He had been approached by numerous people, but he would always refuse, and sometimes he'd hit them with his umbrella and tell them to get out. So anyway, along went Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he approached Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who told him, I once accepted a disciple, but he cheated me and went away. I will not make any further disciples. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started begging him for mercy, please accept me. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I will ask Mahaprabhu. If he gives his permission, then your request will be granted. So come back in a few days. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came back in a few days and asked, what was Mahaprabhu's order? Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I forgot to ask him. Then he came for a third time, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I asked, but he did not give his command. So then, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta got up and said, Karuna na hoile kandiya kandiya prana na rakiba ara. Without your mercy, weeping and weeping, I will no longer sustain my life. So he was going to commit suicide, but then Srila Gaurakishore accepted him. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said about Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, when out of false ego I was thinking, I'm a great scholar of mathematics and philosophy, let any big pundit come at any time, day or night, and I will cut his propositions to pieces. At that time I got the darshan of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev. He ignored everything that was previously appreciated in me, my truthfulness, my moral and pious life, and my intellectualism. He ignored them, knowing them to be of little value. When I saw that he ignored whatever was good in me, I realized how good he himself must be, who could neglect so many, quote-unquote, good qualities in me. What inconceivable wealth he possessed. Being neglected by him, I understood that there was no one more fallen and contemptible than myself. That was my actual identity. The very things that I adjudged desiderata, such as scholarship and upright character, this exalted soul regarded as valueless. I apprehended that within himself, this noble personality possessed priceless treasure. I then pondered that either he's extremely puffed up or he's exceedingly merciful. I then haughtily said to my Gurudev, you're a worshipper of that cheater and debauched Krishna. So why would you be compassionate to someone like me, dedicated to ordinary morality? Humbly and sincerely, I pray to the Supreme Lord for his mercy. Later, by his grace, I recognize that without receiving the blessings of this peerless saint and without serving him, nothing good could happen to me. When I accepted that and acted accordingly, and then received the causeless, unlimited grace of my Sri Guru Dev and refuge at his lotus feet, I deemed my life fulfilled. I had considered my Guru Dev to be unequaled in vairagya, but somewhat short of learning. But he reduced to powder my audacity born of book learning. With the mallet of his mercy, he revealed that whatever I had adjudged to be the highest ideal was in fact most low and despicable. When by his grace that instruction first entered my ears, my diminutive brain lacked the capacity to accommodate such transcendental knowledge. But to all fools like me, he gave the chance to hear such lofty topics. My Gurudev mercifully told me, reject your knowledge, purity, and aristocracy, and come close to me. Don't go anywhere else. Whatever you require, as many rooms, houses, palaces, and mansions, as much scholarship, skills, self-control, and renunciation, you will get. Simply come close to me. Hare Krishna. I have to go, I'm afraid. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj ki. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Premanandi.